Blog Talk Radio.
I can't hear anything. Jerry,
you can't. Can you hear me?
Can you? Yeah, I can hear you, but I can hear a lot of fuzziness. Hey out there, Recruiting Animal Air, can you hear us? Can you tell me on Twitter?
Anybody?
Even though I screwed up.
Yeah, you're
what?
On.
Am I on? Thank you!
Who is
everybody,
that?
Everybody, Recruiting Animal Air! On April, what day is it today? April 9th,
today is the
9th.
Yeah.
Thank you, Jerry.
2 days after my birthday.
It's off to a bad start. It's off to a bad start already. Is it your birthday today?
No, 2 days ago.
Happy birthday, okay. Let me do my intro. I know I'm going to get cut off, and then I'm going to have to come back on, okay? So we got all kinds of technical problems. Anyway, let me go. It's not too often I want to tell you that I read a business article that I like, but I read one today on Inc. magazine. It was about the seven principles. All these articles have numbers in the title. It was about the seven principles of good persuaders. And it was by a guy named Awesome Roar on Twitter. Kevin Dom, I think, is his real name. Awesome Roar on Twitter. Anyway, I said I like the article, but that doesn't mean I agreed with it. It doesn't mean I agreed with what he said, because a lot of what he said contradicts the animal way, what I call the animal way, the philosophy of this show. For instance, he said that wearing people down is not an effective persuasion strategy, but I know for a fact that this isn't true. In fact, it's a classic technique. You drag a negotiation out until the other people are so worn out that they'll concede anything just to get out of the room. In fact, at the very end, you make them think it's over, and then you say one more thing, and then they say, okay. That's how it works. Number two, he says that great persuaders.
Are you going to go through all seven of them?
Yeah, I am, Jerry, if you let me do it. If you let me do it, we'll get through it fast, okay? What happened? Did you cut? What was that sound?
I'm not in charge here. Okay. Sounds like somebody else wondering, oh, no, six more. Cut it in half. Give us the top three.
What's wrong with telling people about persuasion? He says great persuaders manage their impatience because aggressive pushers, he calls them, are a turnoff who will only
I'm managing my impatience right now.
Well, I'm going to tell you, if that was true, you're proving me right. If that was true, that great persuaders manage their impatience, there'd be no point at all to this show, right? And listen,
right.
We've been on 7 years, so that means something. Hmm. That's for me. That's proof I'm right.
That's as long as it takes a piece of gum to work its way through your lower intestine. That's a long time.
Oh.
He also said, okay, forget, let me get through, okay? He said, only argue the big issues.
I'm killing
Don't
myself over here.
Battles.
Oh,
right?
That's
Even
a great
if you know
show.
You're right. Are you laughing at your own jokes? Let me finish, okay? He says, even if you know you're right, don't fight the small battles. And he says, great persuaders build trust by giving the other person credit for everything they say that's true. But I don't agree with that at all. Why give them an inch? You've got to beat them down and make them feel that everything they say is totally, totally wrong. Then he says, big ideas... Yeah. He says, but listen to this. He says, big ideas, I'm going to prove my point. He says, big ideas require thought. He says, great persuaders give people time to convince themselves. Again, way off base. You've already beaten them to a pulp. Why give them a chance to get off? My grandfather used to say, you can't get kicked by a dead horse. And he was right. Once they're down, finish them off. There's one thing the article said that I really liked, and that was its definition of closing. And I'm going to tell you that and then close this off so Jerry's going to be happy. And closing is just asking the other guy if he agrees with you. You ask if he agrees, and then you shut up, and he either tells you where the next battle lies or he concedes. And I'm going to stop there. But if you want to hear more great ideas, stay tuned for Jerry. Jerry, what's your news?
This is the Recruiting Animal Show.
The music sounds like whooshing to me. Does it sound like music to anybody else?
It sounds like music, but it's kind of faint.
Faint? All I heard was like whooshing. So I got on, I played the introductory music, and all I heard was whoosh, whoosh, whoosh.
Really?
I didn't know what was going on. See, that screw me up on Blog Talk Radio all the time. I don't like it. I don't like it.
Crazy.
Okay, I'm gonna,
poor baby.
I'm going to have to... Yeah, I'm going to have to introduce the guest, Jerry, and then I'm going to have to call back in. I got a technical problem with my...
Oh, okay.
Anyway,
Let's do it.
You had a good vacation, though. Am I right about
that?
Oh,
it was great.
Okay, great. But listen, I don't have time for your vacation. I got to sign
off.
Hey,
no, you
got to
keep talking because I've got a call coming in. Hold on.
Oh, don't do that to me. Hey, this is your job. We can't both go off here at the same time. I'm finally putting you in charge. Come on. He's disappeared already. Okay. Anyway, I'll introduce the guest. It's a guy that nobody knows. He calls himself the Warrior, though. He obviously has a high opinion of himself, and his name is Todd Schechter. And that's his name on Twitter as well, at TODDSCHECTER. Todd Schechter. Todd Schechter, come on down. Are you there?
I am here.
Good. Don't delay. Don't
delay.
When I say, are you there? When I say, are you there? I am there. That's what you're supposed to say, okay?
You got to be on it. Like, bam.
Yeah. Now, I'm going to get cut off in a second.
Good.
And Jerry's going to ask you to
introduce
yourself. Okay? Jerry, you're going to ask him to tell what he does. Now, there was a bit of controversy on Facebook before the show.
Hmm.
Some people were saying you're an internal recruiter or a recruiter who's embedded in a client company. I
wonder who would
that.
Know the correct answer
to
this question. Todd, what do you do? Tell us about yourself.
Go ahead.
Elevator pitch.
I'm a senior technical recruiter.
I got 15 years of experience specializing in servicing a variety of IT and engineering accounts in the Northeast area, New England area. My expertise, you know, most of my time is spent with a variety of medical device companies, and I am an agency recruiter, have been an agency recruiter for my 15 years at one company.
So third-party agency guy, not working on-site then?
I'm kind of a hybrid. I work on-site at some clients as we have massive vendor relationships, and I'm also off-site as a Tier 1 vendor.
Really? Do you work mostly with one customer then at a time?
No, I'm multiple. I'm a technical delivery manager. I'm accountable for about 12 to 15 different counts at any given time. There are certain counts that I've serviced over the years that I've built a lot of credibility and relationships with that tend to be more of my breadwinners, but multiple clients.
Do you go out and find new clients, or are you just with these certain clients forever?
Okay, I'm back.
Well, the my
Stay
role
out of it,
really
animal.
Is my core of what I do is finding the right candidates, whatever skill set. We have salespeople in our world. I'm more of a business development person, so once a salesperson sells an account or wants to open up an account at a larger scale, I kind of come in after the sale.
So he's not a BD, he's account management.
I'm a recruiter. I'll always be
a recruiter. No, you just said, no, you're a recruiter, you're doing account management, you're doing recruiting, you're doing BD. You just confused this. I know you're a recruiter, but you're not doing BD, you're doing account management. You're doing Don Draper and recruiting, which is cool, but be clear.
Well, you know, this is the way, the world that we live in with any of these big accounts, it's a license to sell. Just because you're a vendor means you can play in that area. There's a tremendous amount of business.
Okay, I'm taking over again. I don't want you guys to kill the show. Okay, you
Alan,
can't even
Alan
figure
was
out.
Killing it.
You can't even figure out what the guy does. I've been off for 5 minutes and you're
Alan
still talking about it.
I know what
no,
he
I'm
does.
Not confused. Alan
I'm not
was confused.
Confused. They're
kind of confused.
Put down the bug, Alan.
Okay, I'm moving
yeah,
on.
Jerry,
Why do you call yourself the warrior?
You know, I think it takes a thick skull and a lot of failure to be successful. You have to have a constant learning ability and warrior,
yeah, okay,
really,
get
because
it.
I
that's
call
warrior.
I
that's
call
not a good answer.
The,
that's a boring answer. The show's been boring for 5 minutes. Don't keep it boring, okay? That's not the way
hey,
I keep
I
my audience. Okay, how
can
many
I
people
Can I add something
you...
just real quick?
Oh,
Todd,
sure.
Todd, if the warrior is your theme song,
yeah.
You should know that it was done by a band named Scandal featuring female artist
Patti Smythe.
Yeah,
not
we discussed
Madonna.
It already. Okay.
We got that. Yeah.
We discussed it.
I
Thank you, Jerry, for yesterday's question. Hey, come up to speed. Come on. How many people did you recruit on Twitter last year, Todd?
Well, Twitter's kind of an interesting, you know,
answer
social media.
Answer the question.
Habit.
Answer the question. 0, 1, 2, 3,
hostile
four,
witness.
I think there's a tremendous amount of leads in
networking. Answer the question. I asked for a number.
Your Honor.
Listen to me. I asked for a number. How many?
The number? I can't give you a direct number because Twitter
Zero.
And Facebook have helped me so many indirect ways to place people.
Okay, tell us the indirect ways and make it snappy, okay?
Yeah, there's a tremendous amount of referrals and a tremendous amount of activity that you get by leads and generation between Twitter and Facebook. I don't think Twitter and Facebook is the end-all, but it's certainly a great avenue to get your name
you're
out there.
You're boring me! You're boring me! And take a look at Twitter. The job board doctor says, talk to myself. What the heck? I'll see what animal's up to. Turns out, not very much. Yawn. Big yawn.
But hold
Don't
on.
Kill
let me,
me.
Let me,
help
let me,
me.
Ask
help
you a question.
Me. Help me. Help me make the show good. Don't give
Put
me
a number
long
on
speeches.
It. 10, 50, 20, 200?
Nothing.
I would say any between 20 to 25 executive level. Twitter and Facebook are great for executive level searches. And
name one search, an executive level search that Twitter helped you on. Come on.
Twitter, there were several times where I've had a high level medical
times.
Device.
Not several times. A specific search. A specific search. You've known for a month that you're coming on the show. I bang it into people's heads. Don't talk in generalities. Talk in specifics. What search? What one search? What one executive search? Did Twitter help you with, and how?
I was looking for a quality and regulatory consultant, very niche, very high-end in the medical device world. I got my name out there, and I got the posting outside of, I tweeted it on Twitter, and indirectly, my name got filtered into other people who had some interest, and I wound up identifying a candidate based on the activity that I've had on Twitter and the
indirectly.
Network.
What does that mean? Somebody
No, that's okay.
You? What does
I
he mean? I don't know
that
what
as
he
an
means.
Answer.
I want to know. Talking about. What does that mean indirectly? You posted it on Twitter and somebody sent it to someone else who was a good candidate? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I think that in the medical device world where I play a lot in, it's a small niche network so that if people aren't looking, they're more apt to send it out to their friends and to connect with you as a recruiter. So indirectly, meaning I didn't get someone specifically their resume, but I got my name out there, and I got a fill based on someone passing my information along.
You know
That's
what?
Cool.
Are you listening to me? Do you speak English?
I accept that.
I don't even know what he said. Somebody sent you a resume.
Come on, animal.
Because of a referral from Twitter.
Are you an idiot, animal?
I am an idiot. I don't understand this guy.
He tweeted the job. Somebody saw it, sent it to his buddy. His buddy connected him and said, hey, I'm qualified for this, and he placed him.
Can you say yes or no? Can you say yes or no? You agree with Jerry's explanation?
I agree with Jerry. Jerry has got it right on.
Okay, how many of
those
did you have? How many of those did you have last year? Just one?
No, I would say less than 10, more than 5. I don't have the exact number.
Yeah, okay. I know you have the exact number, and I don't believe that it was more than 5.
Oh.
Okay? I just don't believe it. Sorry, but everybody can listen. This, we got a guy who says he's recruited people on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
8 people, mm-hmm. 7 people. That's not bad for a year.
Possibly
but,
6, though.
He's admitted
or
that
nine.
He's kind of sloppy. He's not keeping track, so I don't believe his numbers. Okay, what about Facebook? How many people have you recruited off Facebook?
I don't think Facebook is a great avenue for certain things. Facebook hasn't been real successful with from a recruitment strategy. I think more networking, LinkedIn, cold calling, developing leads from resumes or calling people directly,
so Facebook,
getting names.
Nobody, you didn't recruit anybody from Facebook. Is that what you're saying?
I did not.
Look, I'm
Zero.
Looking at the Twitter. Animals trying vainly to raise the energy level of the show. To no avail. Okay, Jerry Albright asking the same old questions about social media, etc. Boring! That's all our friends are saying that. People who want us to succeed are saying that, here's Kelly Blockdyke. What a name. Okay, that was way too vague what this guy said about Twitter and Facebook. Okay?
Honestly, Twitter is a work... Twitter and Facebook are a work in progress. They're a great tool to use.
Well, work in progress. My eyes glaze over. I know you've got no answer. Do you go to any recruiting conferences, yes or no?
I'm a big fan of one group that is a nonprofit group in my area that I have spoke to many times. I've had several hires in this group. So I would say that there's one core group that I do belong to. To be honest with you, no.
Was that
other than that, I've spent my time.
Let me translate for everybody out there. You don't go to any recruiting conferences, but there's a user group or a professional association that you frequent. Is that right? Do I have it right now?
Yeah, I think a lot of these user groups are great. I've viewed the streaming online conferences from ERE.
I'm dying here. I can't get a clear answer out of you. Here, I'm going to start feeding you stuff from your own blog. Okay.
Well, it's not a direct science.
Recruiting is not an exact science. There's many factors outside of your control that will have a big influence on your success. Can you name one in your own life that, like a rock came out of space and landed on your candidate or something like that, spoiled a placement for you? Do you remember any incident where something was totally out of your control, came out of left field, and screwed things up?
I wouldn't
just say no if you can't,
up.
And I'll move
I wanna,
on. Don't make
you know,
me squeeze. Just say yes or no, and if it's yes, tell us the story.
No. No,
okay,
but I can't tell you other stories.
Well, go ahead. Tell me a story.
Okay. Well, like I said, a lot of the factors in being successful are somewhat out of your control. Until you build credibility with the manager and with the candidates, the human element factor really factors in. So you can prep a candidate as much as you want during the interview process, but your ability to embed yourself into a manager's organization, to embed yourself into the culture, to understand his process, that human element part, once you kind of get that down to a science, and that's very, very hard to do, that allows you to fill requirements.
Okay, Dad, you're still being general. You're going to tell me a story. A story means I had a candidate named Joe Blow. I sent him out to company XYZ. He said he was interested in the job, but once he was there, you know what? He didn't like the hiring manager. He had an ugly face, and he came back and told me, I'm never going to work for that guy. And I said, why not? It's great money. It's the kind of work you want. He said, I don't like the hiring manager. Can you tell me a story like that? That's a story.
Sure. Okay, so I had a really, really difficult requirement with a manager who wanted a lot of different needs. He was looking for a LabVIEW developer that could do hardware design, software programming. Those combination of skill sets along with project management is a very niche area that most people haven't really been successful in certain areas.
Mm-hmm.
This guy wanted the God, candidate to come in and kind of help him put out some fires. We went through 6 different interviews. They identified a guy. I prepped him left and right. They wound up hiring him. He walked out 3 days after.
Why?
Why did he walk out? He was the best candidate in their eyes.
What happened?
The problem is that hiring managers don't always pick the right candidates. You know, the problem is that his soft skills were inept, and he couldn't handle some of the pressure as far as the engagement with other groups. He couldn't handle.
Can you tell us a real story? So, what did he do that was wrong? Don't be general.
What did
he
do
that was wrong?
The fight or flight syndrome. He basically panicked and decided that he was overwhelmed and he couldn't handle it. He came from a company that he's been with for 10 years
mm-hmm.
and he was very complacent in you know, his processes and couldn't think outside the box. The
kind of like when you're at a party, okay,
yeah. uh-huh.
and the acid kicks in and you're like, oh, my God, I got to get out of here. And he just split.
That's what happened.
Like that?
Basically, he passed every technical interview, and they grilled him. The problem was, and the manager even approached me and counseled him, said, look, you need to be more involved. You need to engage with people. The problem is that engineers sometimes don't have those skills and have that uncomfortableness. You know, it's almost
yeah, but
like
what
did it
mean? Why couldn't he get the work done, and what was your lesson there? What did you start doing after that to sort of figure out if the person was a good fit?
Enrolling
you know, it was
Toastmasters.
I started really focusing on the each interviewer, what they were looking for, and really identifying and basically being more involved in the interview process. So if they wanted to extend an offer out to a candidate, they thought walked on water. Technically, I would give them my input because for me, the relationship's more important. To get through the process with the manager,
yeah,
not
yeah,
to hire
yeah,
somebody
yeah.
and
not
get
what
them
I'm
quick.
Saying. That's not what I'm saying. Listen to me. And I got to tell you, I'm reading Twitter today, and Alan Fuhr, can't you tell? I am. He says, don't you have any questions? I'm asking questions. I have to choke it out of my guests.
But
I have
animal,
to choke
animal,
it out of
you make it. You make it seem like anytime something fluky, weird happens, that you're supposed to be able to learn some giant lesson out of it.
You know, there's a lesson here.
Sometimes
guy,
weird stuff just happens.
This wasn't so weird.
And you don't learn anything. And people are wackos.
This wasn't so weird, Jerry. This wasn't weird. The guy had the technical skills, but either, you know, he was somehow really bad with people. We don't know exactly what he did. If, you know, he had a nervous breakdown there when the people
Who
were
cares?
Asking
Move
questions.
On.
No, so I want to say what that for our friend Todd, you know, how did you screen your candidates on that basis? Did you say, what if there's a lot of work, or how much work are you used to getting every, you know, 8 hours, and, you know, are you going to freak out if you get more? Do you think how much
well,
you
no,
can
I
handle?
Think it's a learning curve, because
question?
The problem is when you're hiring highly skilled candidates, you know, they don't have to be able to talk to people a lot of times. They sit there and program, or they sit there and test. You know, this he didn't have that consultant profile where he acted as his own business, you know, as his own commodity. And for this manager, that was a crucial area, 50% of the success. So what I learned was that even if he passed the interview process, I had to really engage with the manager and really set the tone on his comfort level with this guy and the social skills and the engagement of other organizations.
Okay. You say, listen to this, you say on your blog that if two parties cannot come to an agreement, the recruiter needs to bow out of the transaction gracefully and start the process over again. There was a guy, I posted his, I can't remember his name, something D'Amico or something, Jerry D'Amico, I think his name might have been. He said, if a recruiter on my team brings forward a candidate without knowing for sure that he or she is ready to accept the job, that guy's out. He said,
That's
if
absurd.
You bring a candidate forward, your reputation lies
oh,
with that person on every single candidate. I don't
no
ever
one can
want
guarantee
to see
that. Nobody.
Well, I agree with you and partly, you know, and again, recruiting is not rocket science, but it's not science, you know. So, the reality is, you know, you do a better service to your customer by bowing out of a transaction, working with him through the process, and then identifying the right candidate. You can't control people, and sometimes it's just not the right fit, and there's a variety of reasons why.
Yeah,
that guy was saying that if you put forward a candidate that isn't going to accept your offer, then you're fired. That's one of the most absurd statements I've ever heard about recruiting.
Let me go and check.
I'm pissed off.
Let me just find that then, okay? It's a
Didn't say that.
I'll tell you exactly what he said. If you hold on 1 second.
Jeez.
Okay, yeah, his name is Jimmy D'Amico, right? And he says, if you can't close, you're useless. He says, this isn't hardcore selling. Okay, yeah. Closing is making sure that you and the candidate are 100% certain this is a good move and that they will accept. I don't tolerate any turndowns from my team because I train them to pay attention to details. This guy, Todd, didn't pay attention.
He didn't know what the client wanted. I'm going
to
revert. I don't know when the last time you recruited was, you know, but I can tell you for the last 15 years, okay, the human element is a factor that you can't put in a science or a stat to, you know. It's just reality.
Here's a stat that I'll put out there.
How many times has someone backed out of an offer, accepted the offer and left, or stayed at a company for 2 months and walked off?
One out of 10 offers is going to be turned down, if not more. So you tell me how to avoid that fact.
Well, you know what? We better get this guy, Jimmy D'Amico, Director of Talent Acquisition at Spectrum Health, to tell us, because he says he doesn't accept it, and especially on a money issue, which on his blog, Todd tells us that sometimes they can't come to an agreement on money. And these guys, there's lots of recruiters who would say, you never send somebody out to an interview unless you've totally closed them on the money. You can't. I don't believe that. I have to tell you right now. They have to find out what the job is before they can close on the money. But lots of people say
you close on the money beforehand.
You can get a general
situation. I only hire contractors, right? So my process is going to be different than if you hire directing people. But contractors, they needed 2 months ago. They have a target budget. Who sets that budget? The manager. How does the manager know what the market value of these consultants are? He doesn't, right? I never let money be a main factor. I ask that question to the manager because I have a relationship with him, and I ask him, do you want to see candidates outside your max bill rate? Okay. When I talk to the candidates, I can't set a set rate. How can I have a candidate commit to a job, you know, just by having a recruiter explain it to him at a 100-foot level? He's got to go in there. And I'll tell you, there are many factors that are negotiable once the manager is interested and the candidate's interested. You know, rate is one, telecommuting, you know, a signing bonus. There are certain factors, hours that they work. You can't fully negotiate or fully sell somebody just on a phone call.
Jerry, this guy's in your field. He's talking about your business. Do you ask the hiring manager, hey, do you want to see people outside your maximum rate? That sounds like a recipe for disaster.
Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. It depends on if I know the rate is absurd, then I'll say so. Normally, I'm trying to find the customers that have a reasonable rate, and I try to put my contractor in there at whatever their sweet spot is.
Dear,
I don't like being a recruiter that's always testing. Well, can you pay more? Can you pay more?
I would say that sometimes we have these vendor management systems
that
we have to go around or that, you know, won't allow you to exceed a rate. So when I talk to the managers, I say, look, I'm not going to discount this person. I can't get him through the system, but, you know, here he is, and he has exactly what you're looking for. Here are the other candidates you're interviewing that have 50% of what you're looking for in your bill rate. Would you consider this candidate?
Yeah, the key there is the whole vendor management, and I'm working through one of those situations right now. The rate is X, and that's it. So, I mean, you can either put a candidate in there at that rate or hopefully connect with the manager and say, hey, here's somebody that's, you know, $10 more or whatever.
I think it's an education process with managers, and I think it's really the only way that you can, you know, if you have credibility with the manager and say, look, we're going to work through this together. We're going to fill your need, whether it's candidate A or candidate Z.
No, you know. Todd. Here's what you say. You say, look, Miss Hiring Manager, you want Superman for Jimmy Olsen's salary, and it's not going to work, okay? So you either copy it or listen to me, just like you said. I think you said it somewhere. You said, hiring managers, listen to what I have to say because I'm the expert in compensation for contractors. You have to tell them that right up front, not after you're sending people out who are more expensive than they told you they want to pay.
Hey, and sometimes it's a reality check. It's a pulse check. You know, I'll send a guy, manager will come back to me and say, look, I agree with you. you know, and that's where that development and relationship happens. I'm not going to get everything I want. This is what I'm going to settle for, and this is what I want to focus on. If I can't get this, I'll look at those other candidates.
Okay. Anybody want to ask a question? I think the show's okay. I mean, once my technical problem was solved, I don't care what job doctor says. I don't care, job board doctor, if you're bored today or if you've signed off already because you think I'm boring. I think we're talking about real issues here, okay? But there's a number of people have called in. Does anybody want to ask a question? I know Alan's there. I know Todd is there. I just opened area code 303. Anybody got a question or want to say something? Go ahead.
I've got a question.
Oh, Jerry, of course. Go ahead.
I heard Dead Space, man.
I was giving them a chance, the shy people. They have
I'm part of them.
Well,
Todd, do most of your vendor-managed customers, do they have a set markup that is acceptable, or do they typically give you an hourly rate, and then you have to show them what you're paying the candidate and the bill rate? I mean, can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I mean,
confidentially?
So the wave of the future, a lot of global companies have, you know, and again, I'm probably not telling you anything that you haven't heard already if you know the business, you know, is everyone is, you know, vendor management, vendor neutral. So what happens is you get these companies in that don't really have the expertise in recruiting or whatever. They're just making a certain percentage off you, and they're exporting the process. 95% of those are bill rate driven. You know, those only are successful if you develop relationships outside and then work with the vendor managers. They're not all like that, but
do you have to have a specific markup rate? That's my question. And I'm not so much talking about the vendor managed systems because that's crap. I'm talking about a customer who has a standard base of contract vendors and an ATS or applicant system where you put your candidates in there. Are they looking for a standard markup or a standard rate?
99.9% of them are bill rate driven.
Do you have to tell them your candidate's hourly pay rate?
You don't. But
yeah, I'm having this problem with one of my customers right now, and I'm about ready to tell him to shove it.
You know what? Here's
but
my
you
problem
value
with you.
Right
listen,
away
listen,
because
Todd,
of the
Todd,
volume
Todd,
of business.
Todd, yeah. Todd, listen to me now. Listen to me. I had a problem with a vendor management company because someone inside the firm, one of the firms they were managing was the company I wanted to place someone with, and someone inside the firm said, watch those guys. They're recruiters themselves, and they'll steal your candidates. They'll take the people you send into this company and put them in their database for placement themselves later on. Is that a real issue, or am I, you know, paranoid?
You might be a little paranoid.
Paranoid.
But, you know, I like I said, it all depends. That happens a lot when you're doing direct placement. But I think the reality is the more volume you do with a customer, the more flexible you are on your margins. So when you can identify the same candidate that company XYZ gave at a $15 an hour bill rate less, who are they going to work with? They're going to work with you.
Okay. Now, you said you have a message for desperate job hunters. You say, look, pal, when you take a big hit in pay or responsibility just to get a job, you're going to regret it because you won't stay there for long, or you're going to stay there and be very unhappy. Would you refuse to play somebody who said, okay, Todd, I'm willing to take a hit to get a job?
I mean, that's a tough question. I think it depends on the situation. I know you hate generalities, but I have done that before. You know, I have, you know, said, look, you could do this job, but you're way overqualified. I'm gonna basically burn my client if I put you in this job, $20 an hour less than what you've made, because I know in 4 months you're going to be looking. I can't offer you a higher rate. We work for our clients, and we put people to work, okay? We need people, okay, but our customer is our client.
Okay, so, okay, I'll say okay as many times as you do. Okay, so you've never actually seen somebody take a job at a lower level and not work out. You didn't get burned and learn that lesson the hard way. You're just doing it on theory. Is that right?
Well, no, I've had people that I've worked with in the past that haven't been working for 8 months. I will work with the manager and I'll say, look, here's my concern. I think this guy is great. He has great recommendations. He's at a much higher level. But when talking to him, if you have a comfort level that this person is committed, let's do it. But again, you don't want to burn that bridge. You're the necessary evil. You don't want to burn the bridge either way.
Okay. Anybody got a question now? I thought that was a good answer. I thought it was a good question, too.
I rarely have someone bail out on a contract because a higher rate came along. I mean, that's like one out of 50 times. Don't you find that usually people stick to the end of the project or, you know, and it's at that 6 month or 12 month, whatever contract time you have, then the candidate starts getting a little bit edgy. Hey, my contract's coming up in a month. Are they going to extend me or should I start looking around? And then they kind of fluff up their resume and they start getting more calls. But I don't think that someone that's making $10 or $20 less, and 20 is rare, but I don't think that they're subject to any old recruiter coming along and offering them $5 more and they bail. So I think that's a misnomer.
No, I mean, obviously
in our
you're dealing with the level of professionalism, but I'll give you an example internally. I had another recruiter place somebody for a year about three levels lower at a client, you know, a client that we service. He sent me his resume saying, look, you know, I have a relationship with your company, but this isn't what I want to do. You know, this is my skill set.
Some dope has put us on hold.
I pulled them out, explained the situation to the other recruiter who wasn't too happy, but I got him a job at a different organization, salvaged the relationship, and got him a $30 an hour pay rate. I think that people right now, it's such a hard economy, you have to be super careful because there are a lot of people that will take jobs just to take jobs.
Moving on. Hiring managers can be a little abnormal. That's the title of one of your blog postings. Do you have a story about a hiring manager who, you know, was a little abnormal, who maybe turned your candidates off, and you had to go in there and say, look, hiring manager, you are a scary person. You are not impressing people. You're making me waste my time by finding good people, but once I unleash you on them, it's a disaster. Do you ever have that situation?
Absolutely. I mean, look, you know, I grew up in a family where my father was a high-level director at Raytheon, Air Traffic Control Systems, and I've seen it. I've heard stories. I can tell you that when you get to that level, you know, my mother calls it mutant ninja syndrome. You can be an idiot savant. You could be a phenomenal manager. You could be a phenomenal engineer, but you lose sight of certain things that make people successful.
Yeah, okay, I don't understand your answer. I'll just move on.
Well, what I'm saying is that managers are good.
Tie it together for us, Todd.
What's that?
Tie it together for us. Your dad, air traffic controller.
Okay, so engineers are good at engineering work, okay? They're not good exactly at hiring. A lot of them are not, you know. So their hiring decisions can be very off. You know,
why? They understand the job better than you. You're not a technical person.
They understand the job, but do they understand the dynamics of the individual and the dynamics of the role that they're putting the individual in?
I mean, they can't tell if the person's a fit for the job based on their they've been in that kind of position themselves. They should know better than you.
Well, how many times have you seen in this economy or this industry that someone's aced the interview and failed the job? How can you tell off one meeting that this guy's your guy? You know, all you can do is mitigate risk. And I think the more that you get involved and cultivate relationships with managers and consult them, you know, you're adding value.
So
and you're going to get the right
person
in.
You call yourself a warrior, but you're very humble because you admit that you lose a lot of battles. Is that right?
I lose battles all the time, but that's, you know, that's what makes you successful. You know, you just
those paradoxes. I lose battles all the time, but that's what makes me successful. I fail all the time, that's why I'm a success. Like, those two things don't go together. You better explain them.
Lose the battle, win the war thing?
I don't know.
You know, look, you have to have, like I said before, recruiters, how many times do you call, make a phone call to a candidate, and you lose with him? No, I'm not interested. You could speak the world and say, hey, this is the right job. No, I'm not interested. Or the manager, or you try to convince the manager that, hey, this is the right candidate for you. You reach a level where you need to step back and say, look, okay, you're
no,
the
no.
customer.
You reach
you're
a
right.
level, and I just want to say hi to Rebecca. If you've got anything to say, feel free to butt in. Anyone can butt in and say, I have to talk now, and I'll probably let you in. But here's the thing. You reach a level, like you said. You said it on your blog. Listen, hiring manager, you engineering dope, you
idiot,
nerd. Look,
dumbass.
I'm the expert in contractors. You take my advice. What you're looking for is unrealistic, okay? This guy can do the job. Or that guy you want, he's no good for it. Trust me. That's what you have
to
do.
But I would agree. I mean, unless you're a master's in electrical engineering or a master's in software development, recruiters aren't experts. You know, we know enough to know enough, and we have to know when to pull back. You know, the objective isn't to wave your flag or to toot your horn. The objective is to be on par with this manager. Give him, you know, some suggestions. Hey, he's the boss. If he's not open to them, but he's a, you know,
find the guy that your manager is looking for at the bill
fire
rate that he's
boss.
Willing to pay.
Sometimes you got to fire your boss. That's the truth, okay?
Okay, yeah.
I don't think you have to fire your boss. I think you have to educate your boss.
Okay. Anyway, you know what? You made me forget what I wanted to talk about. Okay. You said on your blog, have you ever made an impulsive decision and then seconds later, although on your blog you called it a compulsive decision, you really wanted to say impulsive decision, and then seconds later, you realized how bad it was. Did you? Obviously, you did that. Can you tell us what you were writing about? What happened?
You know, I think, like I said, overstepping
your
boundaries.
No, tell a story. Tell a story.
For example,
listen to me or say, animal, I can't remember that. Lie.
Okay,
I'll know
example,
you're lying,
this,
but I don't
guy,
care. You have a right to
fire!
Say secrets.
All right, this high-level engineer that I had six interviews. There were 5 hours apiece. The job was going on for months. The manager said, hey, we're going to give him a shot. I have some red flags, but, you know, this guy, I think he can do it. I went against my grain. I thought he was going to fail. But I said, look, you know, it's a difficult position. It's going to be hard to find the right candidate. Let's give him a shot. My gut said no.
Okay, and you went against your gut. You know what? I don't know if we're still broadcasting. Derek Zeller said either Animal was just silent or the show got shut down. I think it was the latter. Technical difficulty somewhere. Back on the phone, but not online. Great. Thanks, Blog Talk Radio, for taking my money and giving me nothing but problems, okay? Gee whiz.
No, so how do we resolve your technical issues on your show to make your show better?
Right.
Yeah, I don't know.
Let's turn
those
around.
Yeah, it's beyond me. You know what? They put these stupid ads in front of the recordings of the show, the archive shows, and I have to pay them like $100 a month to get rid of those stupid ads. I'm already paying them for the shows. Okay. Is there anything we've discussed so far or not discussed so far that you really have a burning desire to tell us, that you think you could tell us something, that, you know, a revelation that's really going to transform us? Because what I've heard so far, I have to tell you, you're the first guy who keeps saying, you know what, sometimes it doesn't work out. A lot of times it doesn't work out. I can't control everything. Unlike Jimmy D'Amico, that guy says, hey, if it doesn't work out, you stink. You don't even belong in this job. I'm going to kick you off my team.
Well, you know, look.
And you know what
he said first off?
He said, finding people is a cinch. He said the hard part is just convincing them to take the job. Do you agree with that?
I say the reverse. I can convince anyone to take a job as long as it fits, as long as I understand the need to the level that I'm supposed to.
Uh-huh.
You know, I don't think that is the issue. I don't think you fire your customer. I think that's you got to do the opposite. It's not
a
one-shot
deal. We're moving on. What's your strength as a recruiter? Is it your humility?
My strength is just my intensity, my desire to succeed. You know,
because
I think
you won
agency
a prize.
Recruiters
I've got a picture of. I got a picture of you. You're a giant, and you're standing beside a very short woman with a transparent plastic plaque or something. Employee of the week or something like that, you go in a little prize. Am I right? I put that picture.
Like I said,
I put that.
But you know, again, you know what drives people is money. Okay, what drives people in recruiting, from my understanding, is one of your questions was, you know, what are your hours? Recruiters don't have hours. Recruiting never sleeps. If you're a recruiter that shuts off and shuts on from 8 to 5, you're never going to be successful. A lot of corporate recruiters do that. Agency recruiters, I think, are more hungry, are more apt to, you know, be more driven. So I think that that's what I add.
Okay. What if, do you have any metrics that you track?
Metrics as far as...
Do you measure anything that you do? For instance, calls per day. Do you know how many you make on average?
Well, see, here's... I have a problem with metrics because it's not how hard you work. It's how
because
smart
you're not
you
good
work.
At arithmetic,
I know you hate that.
Is that why? Okay.
Everybody that works smarter instead of harder has a problem with metrics.
I have a problem with metrics because I can show you metrics, you know, of people that have made 100 calls and had 54 interviews and gotten one fill. You know, my goal is to partner with the manager to have him buy into my...
I would take those numbers, by the way.
I tell you, when I can get to the point where I can submit two resumes, two interviews, and then offer a job to somebody, my metrics are not going to be as great as your metrics from a numbers perspective, but they're a lot smarter. It's a lot smarter than worrying about metrics.
Okay. Fine. That's a good answer. What about presenting the offer to the candidate? Do you insist on being the person who presents it, or do you let the hiring manager or the HR monkey or whoever it is present it?
Well, 90% of the time, you know, they're going to be an independent consultant. They're going to be a W-2 consultant of us. We typically, from co-compliance, we typically extend the offer. You know, nothing is set in stone, so I've gone back and forth and negotiated offers. But typically, we're the ones that send the offers. Sometimes
because
the managers will ask to do reference checks.
To clarify, though, you're a contracting company, so you're the one hiring them. Animal
correct.
Doesn't understand anything.
I understand
about
that. I realized after that, you know, in his case,
that it was a stupid
not.
Question.
Yeah, okay. Oh, you know what? I'll admit it. I'm like this guy. I fail a lot of the time, right? And I have it stuck right in my face
hey,
on Twitter. This show stinks. Animal's stupid,
hey,
right?
I
if
have
I don't
a question.
Pick it up during the show, they
got
tell me
question.
After the show. I
got
can't be. I have to be modest, okay?
Okay. Todd, what is your general customer base viewpoint on using independent or 1099 or corp-to-corp contractors? Or is there an ADECO policy on that?
You know, the only thing I can tell you is that, you know, some clients are very open to it. Some clients are not. You know, I think it's more of an education process. We have a vetting process, you know, that we go through. There are clients that are very strict and want everyone to roll in as a W-2 employee, and I'll tell you, we have issues with that when you're dealing with senior consultants who have their own corporation, who travel across the country, and that's a challenge.
Yeah, okay. What about 1099 guys?
1099 is, honestly, it's more, we don't use 1099 anymore because it's an old, archaic term, you know. 1099 people are not, you have to be incorporated with an LLC with insurance requirements, with articles of incorporation, with proof of customers. You really, this day and age with all the rules and regulations, you have to be really established. You can't get a, smaller companies will do 1099 business, but most of my clients, you know, you have to be a legitimate consultant.
So, yeah, so they do not want you to send anybody a 1099.
No,
and
no,
it's
like
not,
said,
it's not an archaic terminology.
80,
I mean, there still are 1099s in the IRS.
I probably have about 80% of my clients because there's an added value. You know, what I tell my customers is, look, you get more bang for your buck. It's going to cost us less to do business, and I'm going to transition that into cost savings for you. You know, we have a vetting process, and it's set up differently, but most customers don't have a problem with it. Some customers do.
Okay, so you... There's no policy against a 1099 guy. Not every contractor is incorporated, you know. I mean, you know that we know that. But.
Well, 1099 meaning in order
yeah,
to
nobody,
do
you know,
work
not
with
everybody.
Us,
I'm letting you guys talk about this.
I want this answer.
Not
people know what
1099
is.
Yeah, but you didn't even explain what 1099 and stuff is. Not everybody knows. I didn't know what you're talking about. I figured
well,
I'd let
you
go on for a while, but you're never stopping. You're taking it too far.
Okay,
well,
so
you either are incorporated or you're going to be a W-2 employee.
Yes,
W-2. What's W-2? You know, I got an audience. Not everybody
works
in
your
field.
Your audience is not in Canada, dude. W-2 means an official employee of the contracting company who has you working at their customer. Incorporated means my company is going to engage your company on a business level to go provide service to my customer.
And
the 1099 person is right in the middle. They're not your official employee. But they don't have a separate corporate structure that you're going to pay. So you're using their tax identification number, a.k.a. Social Security number here in the States, to report the wages that you're paying that person. Corporate America has a push towards they don't want any of those people in there. You're either
a W-2
employee or a corporation.
Liability issue with that.
Sorry to clarify that, Rick, animal.
But
thank you. You should have done it at
the start.
The
reality is when you're dealing with consultants that make $90 to $200 an hour, 90% of the time, they're going to be independent consultants.
Right. They don't want. They're not coming onto your payroll for a 6-month gig.
No, and they want their write offs. You know, they're used to traveling. They're not going to go W-2.
Yep. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for explaining it. That would have been nice at the beginning. I don't know how many people will drop off listening to that. You know what?
Dude,
if they
drop off because of that, with 5 minutes left in your stupid show, they don't even need to call in next week.
Okay. Yeah. You know what you said, something, you know, Todd, that I kind of like? You know, Jerry said once famously that if you're a real recruiter, you got to be ready to take a $50,000 punch in the stomach and get right up back again. And it sounds like you really believe the same thing. You can find a great guy for some reason. It doesn't work out. And you just got to pick up the pieces and go back to work. Am I right about that?
Yeah. I mean, I can't tell you how many times, you know, there's so many factors out of your control, whether – he doesn't get along with certain people in the group or certain lead people in the group are, you know, jealous or have their own agenda and it backfires in them. You really have to be a duck. Everything has to roll off your back. In order to be a successful recruiter, you just have to continue.
You
know
what?
Jerry's
in your business. I never hear him talk about the same kind of people problems that your candidates have. Jerry, am I right or wrong about that?
You're forcing him to come up with odd stories from time to time.
I don't think so. No, I don't think so.
Yes, I know so.
Yay.
Look, you're asking me for problematic issues and how I kind of work through them. That doesn't happen all the time. But when it does.
Imagine that, animal. I was right again.
Okay, listen, Todd. This is a question about self-discipline. How do you get yourself to work when you don't feel like it? Do you have any tricks you can share with us?
You just, the only thing I can tell you is that, you know, famous motto that someone taught me, recruiting never sleeps.
We heard it already.
You continue. All you do, you're driven based on sales, numbers, fills. Agency recruiters are driven based on that. And if you're not driven by that to be successful, you know, my company only hires athletes. Because they believe that they're intense, committed, they can work with teams, they're driven.
No fatties?
Okay, you're making it sound like an ad. Okay.
No, I'm just saying.
Todd,
true.
Do you have recruiters that work for you, or are you a solo guy within your company? And
no, I mean, I you know, like I said, I work with many, many different recruiters. Directly with companies or, you know, as a
development
manager.
Let me ask you crisply, let me ask you before it's over. It's almost gone, the time. Chris, you do business development as well. You pick up new orders. Is that right? Yes or no?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Do you make business development cold calls, like yes or no?
Yes.
But I thought you do that
within the customers that you're working with.
Yeah, but say, for example,
be the answer here.
Being 15 years into the medical device industry, everybody knows everybody. You build credibility. So I have a candidate that I got an offer to. He decides to go to my offer. He'll give me a call and say, hey, you know, I declined this offer at this company. Here's his contact information. Talk to him. You know,
okay,
that's
not a new
that's
business
what I
development
get
call. That's not. That's not calling up Mr. Jones. Hey, you never spoke to me before, but I'm
right.
Todd, the warrior, Schechter,
well,
I want you to do business with me.
I think that in order to be a good recruiter, you can't bite off more, you know, than you want. You know what I mean? It's the reality is that, you know, recruitment is recruitment, sales is sales. Business development and recruitment are together, but, you know, yeah, I truly believe that you can't be successful in both.
Really?
You can't?
That's news. That's news.
Well,
well,
I think
I
that
think
any recruiter, I think any recruiter, any
okay,
recruiter is a sales
talk.
Guy.
Let Rebecca
wait,
talk because I know she's going
to
be on
clarify.
My side.
You can't be good in both.
Well, true sale, it's very it depends on the volume, okay? With the sheer number and volume of accounts that I support based on the scope and size of my organization, you can't be a true salesman, just like you can't be, you know, you can't just dingle your foot into social media. You know, people have, companies have social media specialists, right? I'm not a social media guy. I'm somebody that's, you know, is trying to get involved, more involved in it. But in order to be 100% successful in social media, you have to dedicate.
Okay,
your
we were talking about recruitment, recruitment and sales, not social media.
But here in the United States, we talk about recruiting. Okay, we're not in the UK.
So recruiting and sales are you can't be good at both.
Well,
yeah.
Like for example, you know, again, you know, Jerry talked about these major accounts and these vendor neutral systems, and you know, I talked about the license to sell. Well, you know, I'm doing sales and business development because there's no guarantee I'm going to fill the job. There's no guarantee the manager is going to work with me. I have to develop that relationship within a global national account that I'm servicing. So I'm doing sales, but I'm not doing sales to the extent that a true salesperson would be doing.
Okay,
it's hard
on.
To jam
no, no,
it
not
all
end the
in.
Show. We're not going to end the show on that, okay?
And why not?
Because I'd like to end on a different question. You can take that up again in the after show, okay? Let me just see. Do you take any courses for recruiters? Do you educate yourself in any way? Or you're not a sourcer then. Do you source candidates?
Well,
how do you get your
I have a hard time with that title because a lot of companies, especially in the corporate world, they break out my position into four roles. How can you be a good recruiter if you're not a sourcer? You know, the reality is I don't see the distinction between two roles. I think they're both the same.
Okay. It's obviously, yeah, they do break them up. When I was off the air at the beginning, I heard you guys, you and Alan and Jerry trying to figure out what you do exactly. And now I understand. They don't know if you're an account manager or whatever. What about this? Rayanne said, good recruiters know within seconds if they will hire somebody or if they won't hire somebody, right? The last recruiter said, if you've been reading the resume for more than 60 seconds and you can't tell if that's the right person, they're not the right person. What about this speed of assessment? Do you believe it's a split-second thing, or do you take time to figure out?
Well, it goes into working smarter, not harder. You know, the reality is recruiters can recruit at a 100-foot level. We're not engineers. You know, depending on how well you know your client depends on a lot of factors too. But I don't say in 60 seconds you could do a quick overview and say, hey, this guy's worth calling. And you can, once you talk to him, if you have enough valid points to sell to the manager, then you can get him an interview. These are people, right? Once you get him into the interview stage, the human element of
No. We're
happen,
not getting to that stage. We're getting to the stage where you decide to put them forward to the interview, how many seconds or minutes does it take? These guys say it takes a few seconds. Or looking at the resume, deciding to call the person, it only takes 60 seconds. Yes or no?
No.
Okay.
No.
You know what? Okay, we're at the end of the show. Jerry, there's a number of people on. Don't go away yet, Todd.
Okay,
there's
man, I'm freaking.
I'm freaking out.
There's
a number of people here, so you're going to have an after show today because we haven't had one for a long time. You haven't an after
All right,
show.
Hold on.
All right,
can you give me a minute? Can you give me a minute?
Okay. Yeah, I'm going to thank Todd. Todd, you know what? I like having you. I think you're a great guest, and I hope you call in again because, you know, we even get through half the questions. So
when are you starting your own company, Todd?
Huh? I'm a family guy.
He's
you know,
a company
I'm
man.
I'm too young, and I got too many mouths to feed to start a family. So
company
yeah.
man.
Start
okay.
family.
So, but you're a humble. I want to say the distinctive about thing about you. I mean, you make these bold statements. I'm the warrior, and you're an athlete. They only hire athletes at your firm. But at the same time, I got to tell you, you're way more modest than almost anybody I can remember being on the show. Like, there's lots of things out of my hands. I'm not an engineer. You know, I can't promise it's going to work out. People don't usually
90%,
say that up
90%,
front like
I'll just leave it with this. 90% of your success is the perception that people have on you and whether you need to change that perception.
Well, that's a question we're not going to get to today, but Todd Schechter, thank you! Wow.
Is the show over?
What a show. Hey, who else here, real quick?
Rebecca's here.
Rebecca? Who else?
I'm Michael Cox in San Antonio.
Who in San Antonio?
Michael Cox.
Yeah, how's it going, Michael?
Going well.
Who else is here? That's it?
No,
hey,
there's
animals.
More. They're just shy, Jerry. Give them a second to talk.
Hey, Animal, how come you never participate in the after show?
Because you kicked me out.
No, just the guest. I've
no,
always wondered why you leave.
Either. I've been kicked out a lot of times. Get off
you're
the show, you
back
say.
In.
Get
you're
off
in.
My
you're...
show.
Maybe you need to sit here and take it. Because
I guess believe me. Yeah, okay. Yeah, I'll
dude,
sit here and take it.
You're starting off
in.
Every show.
You've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 people, including you and me. So there's 4 people. Only 2 have identified themselves.
Come on, other people.
And Michael Cox.
You know, Recruiting Animal, I'm glad I didn't have to sing today. That was, you know, I was getting a little nervous.
Oh, he's
about
here.
That,
you're not supposed to be here. You know what?
Get
I
out
gave
of
you
here.
The break. I gave you the break.
Oh,
on. Just let me tell
I, well, that's what I'm asking. Am I supposed to be off?
No, you're supposed to be off, but I'll say I gave you the break on singing because I had to hang up. That was our singing period. I didn't want to come on.
Oh,
and start
okay,
the
good.
Okay,
thanks, Todd.
You,
but
you
no,
have to hang up.
We're going to critique your performance on the show, and if you stay and participate, it'll influence us unduly.
All right, well,
no,
I might as well stay.
No, you got to go.
No,
go!
Hey, listen, who's in charge here?
Me.
This is Jerry's portion of the show. It's Jerry's
all
portion.
Right.
It's
well,
after
I'm going to listen to Jerry.
You know what, Todd, I have to tell you something. I beg the guest, read animalshowbasics.com. Everything is there, but no one wants
I read
to
it.
Read it. It explains how the show works. You wouldn't be asking me the phone number 10 minutes before the show. Read the instructions, okay?
Hey, listen. This is my first time. I'm a rookie on this show.
That's true.
I wanted to make sure everything
not
went
only
smoothly.
That, he volunteered. He volunteered
I appreciate your
to
follow
be
up.
On the show. I appreciate that. Not many people volunteer. I have to wring their necks to come on. Okay.
Thanks, Todd.
I like this. You know, hopefully I did well. How did I do?
Look, this is why you got to get out of here, because
hang
here's what we're going to do. We're
going
to talk about you. And if you're here, then nobody wants to talk openly and honestly. Do you
all
want,
right, well, thank you.
You want real
thank
feedback
you very much.
Or do you want
was,
to pretend that you're the best ever?
It was a pleasure, and let me know when you want me to come back. I'll come back on.
All right, man, see ya.
All right, take it easy. Bye.
Okay, Rebecca, what do you think about this guy?
No straight answers. I don't feel like we got a lot of straight answers from him, but I don't think he has any experience outside of Adecco to give us anything more than, you know, a very narrow view. So he's an all right guy. Not overly impressed with him, other than he's got tenure, but that's it. I looked through his blog. Again, nothing really caught my eye on that. It wasn't
really?
Anything. He wasn't saying anything new and exciting. He's just saying the same
do you,
old
I
stuff.
Mean, do you expect new and exciting all the time?
I do. I expect a lot from people. Yeah.
Huh.
So
you're probably not married then, are you?
I am.
Okay. Well, that's an interesting topic then. What do you think of the scores then, Rebecca? We need a score.
Animal had some great... Sounds like Animal's got some really good, clean questions going on, so I like that.
Yeah.
So I give Animal an 80. The recruiter, you know, he's a 60, and I'm sorry. He's just playing both sides of the fence, has little to no experience outside of a deco.
But is there anything wrong with that? Why does he have to have so much experience outside of deco? If he's well paid and he's doing good work and he's providing for his family and he's confident in what he's doing, I think that's great.
Yeah, but I think that's average. That's average.
No.
That's average. That's not, you know, and that's what we need to hear, of course, out here. But it's a protected environment. It's not like you have to, you know, I think.
But don't your customers that hire recruiters from you, don't they want you to find them somebody like this who's going to?
No, they wouldn't touch this guy.
Oh, you're kidding me.
No, wouldn't touch him.
That's absurd.
Why?
This dude makes placements.
Yeah, he's got 12 years at the company making placements, so he's
yep.
got really good internal rep, right? I'd like
sure.
to see him. I'd like to see more of him moving into a boutique a lot earlier than 12 years. He's
so your customers want you to recruit people for them that change jobs every 2 years?
No,
This dude is a dedicated guy. He's competent. Sounds like he understands where to push and where to pull with his managers and his customers. All kinds of stuff. I think this
yeah,
guy had a lot of skills.
Man.
I'd hire this. Hey, perfect.
He's a good
welcome
man.
To the welcome to the new company, Todd.
Well, there you go. I'd rather see, like, he came out of TAD. Love that background. Love those 3 years at TAD. I would have liked to have seen him, you know, at a deco a little bit, maybe anywhere between 3 to 5 years. But he should, by now, in his career, you know, he's probably making what, 120. 150, if that.
Sounds great.
Well, you know, I'd like to see him in his own agency. You know, he should have had a couple of jumps in there, and I would have liked to have seen him in his own agency.
Okay. All right.
Or in management. Why isn't he in management yet?
I don't know.
Yeah, see, there's something to be said there. He's your steady Eddie. He's going to sit in the back corner. He's going to fill his orders. He's not going to say very much. He's not going to get into a lot of...
Why wouldn't every company in the world want a dozen guys like this guy?
Because they're filling orders. They're not doing the 360. They're reliant on having the orders pummeled to them. If there's no orders there, they typically, and I'm not saying this about Todd because I haven't met Todd all that much, but they're not going to be doing that 360 desk. And that's what clients are looking for. Jerry,
well, clients that don't understand how to break the job apart and to keep multiple talents busy. I can see that. I mean,
yeah.
who wouldn't want to buy a money machine? Who wouldn't want to buy a recruiter that can go out and bill a couple $100,000? I'll take 10. Who wouldn't do that?
I got tons of companies that won't do it. I got tons of companies.
Well.
Yeah. It's another conversation. It really
yep.
is.
All right, Michael, what do you think?
I enjoyed the show. I think there were lots of really good sound bites, but not very good, like, in-depth, detailed. How do you do? What makes you successful or more successful than everybody else that's around you? Kind of stuff.
He couldn't ever really get there. He had a hard time just jumping right into answering a question. Very ambiguous.
Answer questions. I mean, I appreciated the fact that Animal was trying to paint him into a corner and say yes or no, and every time he did, with very few exceptions, he would get extremely verbose. And
he never could say yes or no, ever.
I think he said it
He's
once.
He's a great company man. Sorry.
So, yeah, it was exhausting to try and get to the real answer. But,
yeah.
Like I said, he did have some really good sound bites that I think have, you know, kind of gotten, he's gotten stuck on. Things like he's the warrior and the 90% of success is how you are perceived. Sales versus recruiting. I wanted Animal to let him run on why it is that I can't be that 360 desk person. Either you do one or the other, or you do them both poorly, kind of thing, is what he was leading into. But I realized it was late in the show.
You can't really master all parts of the job and take each part of the job as far as it could be. I mean, It's just really tough to do.
Yeah, it is tough to do, but it's, I mean, if you mentioned master, you know, I'm all about mastery, and
yep.
Well, here's one more thing that I need to get better at.
Yep.
But I don't think you have to be one or the other. You are correct. You can't be the best in both of those areas, but having a high level of proficiency in both is crucial.
Mm-hmm.
I think he is a company man. He's extremely comfortable where he's at, and comfort is one of those dangers.
I'd love to have a guy like that. Absolutely.
Yeah. I think this kind of guy would drive you nuts, Jerry. Because the second you pushed him into a corner and you asked him to make a decision, he would not make a decision. He wouldn't. He'd give you exactly what you want to hear.
Well, what decisions do you think that I would be forcing him to do? I mean, he's placing 20-some contractors a year.
20 a year? I'm sure that there are recruiters on this call that are placing more than 20 contractors a year.
I don't think you understand the business.
It's just you and I. So, I've done more than 20 last year. But I'm internal. And
here's what I'm saying. If a dude like that wants to come on board with a company like mine and make 20 contractor placements a year, I'll take 100 guys like that.
I think you're missing something here.
Would you want him to do some business development as well? I mean, maybe he could grow your business in that area
If he's a recruiter, I would expect more along the lines of, you know, 40 to 50 people out a year. 20 a year? I'm sorry, but if your entire job is just recruiting and placing contractors, you better be doing one a week, one every other week at the most. He's not even doing that, guys.
He's doing one every other week. 20 was just the number that I threw out as a
I worry about that number. That number's low.
Have you run a contracting company?
Yes, Jerry.
Perhaps I'm unaware.
Yeah. You're talking to somebody who, on average, had 72 contractors out working, rolling all the time.
No way.
Yes way.
Sorry, girl. Not buying it.
You don't have to buy it. That's what I did.
I'm just talking about current world stuff.
Current world stuff. Again, my desk is split between doing the training and then also placing recruiters.
Right.
So.
And so you've got 70.
I don't place contract recruiters. I place recruiters. Like, I place permanent recruiters in third-party agencies.
Okay, I understand that. I'm not trying to be contentious. I'm just saying, have you... I don't need to get into it. You're telling me that if someone placed 20 contractors a year, that's not good enough for you and you don't want them. I just find that statement hard to swallow.
Okay. I'm telling you there's something wrong there. With all the recruiters I talk to, 20 contractors a year is too low if that's all you're doing is recruiting contractors. And people right out of his direct competitors are doing more business than he is. And in Massachusetts, when he sits in a high technology corridor, he should be doing a lot more than what he's doing. And I've worked in Massachusetts.
Let's say your average, and I'll just do some easy numbers. Your average margin is, let's say, $23 an hour, okay? And your average contract is, even at a minimum, 8 months. That's 1,500 hours. And you do that times 20. Each year, that guy is billing $690,000 profit.
His competitors in his office are doing well above that. Well above that.
It is absurd to think that that guy doesn't have a place in anybody's company.
No, I'm telling you.
No, sorry.
That's okay.
Somebody's going to bill $700,000, and you're going to tell them, your friend over here is doing 1.5?
Yeah.
I find that extremely...
I'm telling you, the price is in... It's market, and in Massachusetts, he should be doing a lot more than what he's telling you he's doing, especially if he's doing medical medical
20
device.
20 is the number I came up with.
Well, then it's too low. It's too low.
Wow. That's so placing a high-margin contractor every other week is not good enough for you. I mean, I'm just trying to make sure that I got this right.
Yeah, I'd expect him to have a rolling desk of about 50 to 70 contractors.
One person cannot keep 50 to 70 contractors billing.
Okay.
One person by themselves keeping 50 to 70 contractors billing.
Gary, you're thinking about it in a boutique agency. His job is to just place the contractor. They have entire infrastructure built about maintaining that contractor, dealing with all the payroll. He's not dealing with any of that. He is doing just find a candidate, get them in for the interview, and get them signed on the dotted line. That's all his job is.
No, he is also managing that whole customer side of relationship. Maybe you didn't hear the first part of the show. I don't know.
Okay.
He's his own ecosystem within this dozen of customers. He's working with the manager. He's not just sourcing candidates that get placed by somebody. This guy's working the whole, he's doing the full thing inside.
Mm-hmm. His K-Force competitors are doing twice as much as he's doing. Guaranteed.
I got to say I doubt that, girl.
I can guarantee it.
Can you?
Yep, can.
That K-Force recruiters are placing a contractor every week.
Double what he's doing. They've
and those are the same people that make $45,000 a year?
No, they're making more money than that.
The original point is, I'll take that guy over here any day. And your point was, you wouldn't.
I wouldn't.
You would or wouldn't?
Would not.
Seriously?
Yep, would not.
I'm getting pissed off.
That's okay.
Mike, whose perspective are you with here?
If he's doing one every other week, if he's only doing that, that is ridiculous. That's the number I said, though.
I just threw 20 out there.
But, yeah, we're not talking about him. We're talking about some fictitious character that's doing only 20.
Okay, yeah.
That's doing only one every other week on a high margin, and if that's all he's doing.
To a profit of $690,000 a year, and that's only on an 8-month contract. They all go longer than that. And that's only at $22 an hour. 25 to 30 is fairly typical. So
yes,
this guy is really $1 million. If 20 contractors is $1 million profit per year.
Yeah,
period.
If I was still on the outside, I would absolutely hire the guy. But I would also, I mean, if he's that low and he's not doing anything else, it would, just working in the same environment, if this person was doing just that, it would get really annoying to me that that's all he's doing.
So you would be then the agency owner pissed off at the guy that's only making $700,000 profit for you, saying, I really need $1 million out of you this year?
Why would I not push him to do more? I mean, because
it's just funny. I think that's the reason most of these guys that do $500,000 or $750,000, they get so tired of the agency owner pushing them for more and more that they say, you know, I'm the one making it rain in here. I'm out of here.
He'd choke on his own. That guy yeah, he would. There'd be no question.
We've now moved to the broader picture of a guy that can place 20 contractors a year and telling them, I need $1 million.
I'm saying that if he's only doing one every other week or two a month on average, I think he could do more.
And you forget all the tools he's got access to and all the burden that he carries.
Yeah. Paying for Career Builder.
You got
Sorry.
It.
That's a whole 600 a week. Month.
But he's using it all. He's not.
No, hold on, Rebecca. The days of being able to say, hey,
we have all these resumes and we have all these tools and we pay for the phone bill. That was 1991.
Yep.
Now, there is no barrier to entry to go out and do your own thing, especially if you need to rely on a monster or career builder or whatever. $1,000 a month, you can have all that stuff.
This guy who's doing, and I'm sorry, I don't know who else is on the call, but the other, if he's doing every other week, he's a steady Eddie. There's no fire. There's no drive.
And so you're encouraging your customers to not look for steady Eddie people that they can rely on year in, year out, and instead only go for the people who are going for the gold every month.
I only place top producers. That's all I play.
Good shtick, but I'm not agreeing with it.
Mm-hmm.
You're telling me that your customers would not want a guy like this.
My customers would not pay me for a guy like that.
I'm dying now. So a guy that can keep 20 contractors working, $700,000 a year in profit.
The ramp time would be a long time for him.
Ramp time, okay. Let's
ramp
say the ramp time is 4 months.
A contractor every other week. So he's going to what? He's going to take 6 months to get there.
Oh! Hurry up!
Not this guy.
You bring him into your environment, it's going to take, it takes any recruiter a year to build their desk.
No, it doesn't. Not in contracting.
Well, okay.
So you're hiring this guy at, let's say you hire him at a $60,000 salary. It's $30 an hour. So at the end of his first month, he's probably got a couple contractors working. Usually, they're going to be all gung-ho at their new place. So they've got something in the bag or whatever. So by the end of the first month, the dude is at a net profit and is at a net profit from there on out.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that just surprises me that your customers aren't into people like that. But,
well,
hey,
Jerry, would you pay her to find somebody like that? I'm just curious.
Sure.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Well,
so you'll pay
you
me $15,000 to find somebody like this for you.
Absolutely. Why wouldn't I? If people are not in prepared to make an investment into someone who most likely is going to quadruple their investment,
most
if you can't see the forest for the trees, then you shouldn't be in the position that people like me should be in.
Jerry, most people can't even bank a first year's salary for a recruiter. They don't even budget it. They budget 3 months.
Then they're
for
just pretending. They're playing.
Well,
if I'm going to hire somebody, and for the first 90 days I'm sitting here going, God, they've got to make a placement. Oh my God, it's either this guy's paycheck or my car payment. That person shouldn't even be hiring anybody. They should instead focus on building a split network and working together and, hey, man, let's make a placement. Can't wait to send you your half or can't wait to get my half. But I know several recruiters that are going through the same thing. How do I get these people to produce? Well, how about pay them? How about make a commitment to them? And then once you're paying somebody, then you can have influence on where they spend their time. Otherwise, you're just hoping that they make you some money. You can hope your ass off, but it's not a business plan.
Okay, we got agencies out here that bring people in off the street and expect them to make a placement with no pay and no training.
Yeah, that's just absurd, and those people are not my competitors. I mean, that's a different game, I guess. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy. But, yes, you bring me any person who wants to go get 20 contractors working and is capable of doing that. I believe that Todd here is. Anybody. Absolutely, I'll pay a fee for that person. I'd love to. I mean, please don't send me 30 resumes this afternoon because I'm... You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I know.
I mean, not somebody who would like to, but a guy like Todd? Absolutely. Now, of course, I'd spend more time getting to know who Todd really is and what he really does rather than argue with him and make him tell me stories and either answer yes or no, and it would be less combative. And I'd really want to know, all right, what do you do when you don't have a job order on your desk? Where do you go get one? And if it's, well, we always have them. They're always in the system. We're signed up with national accounts, and I just go pull them off the thing. That's one thing. If it's, you know, I've got customers that I can call and they'll always squeeze something out for me because I've worked with them for a decade, and they know when they push comes to shove, I'll come up with somebody. That's the guy I want on my team. Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right, guys.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hey, Michael, we didn't get your scores for the show.
Oh, I'd say Animal 80 and the guest 70.
Mm-hmm,
just because
mm-hmm.
he like I said, he had a lot of really good little squibs, little sound bites that he was able to share. But
so your score then is safely $10,000 for each of his $700,000 that he's billing. You're going to give him a 70, so that's how much per dollar billed. I'm just trying to figure this out.
There you go.
1 point for every $10,000.
Yeah.
That sounds fair.
I wasn't grading him on his performance outside of the show.
Which is really what a focused scorer should do. I appreciate your commitment to the score, Michael.
There you go.
All right, now let's go out there and do whatever we do.
Have a good one.
Bye.
Have a good one. Bye.
Bye.